So I want to start off this evening by painting a picture for you of sorts. I want you to imagine yourself walking down University Avenue. It's late, dark. The street lights are throwing sharp shadows from every building corner. And as you walk, the first few flakes of snow start to fall, brought on by a cold east wind, catching the light in halos around every light post that you pass. You're walking to your car, and maybe coming home from dinner or drinks with some friends, when out of the corner of your eye, you see a figure huddled in one of the doorways. It's a woman, drawing her coat tight to ward off the chill. And maybe it's the shadows or the haziness of the light through the snow, or maybe it's that the clothes that she's wearing are so different from the ones you remember. But it takes you just a few beats to recognize her. There, huddled in that doorway, is your sister. And you call out to her. You see her give a little start as she looks up to watch you approach. You ask her where she's been, why no one's heard from her in a little while. You ask what she's doing out here in the cold, why she's wearing such tattered clothes. And she explains to you that she's on the way to a shelter where she's been staying. But it was a little further away than she thought, and the snow caught her off guard. She asks if you'd mind giving her a lift. So, what do? Do you give her the lift? Do you maybe offer her a little bit of food? Do you offer her a place to stay? Do you open your own home to your sister? And those are the easy questions. And the harder question, the one that's the topic of the sermon this evening, is what does it mean to serve a God who says that everyone we encounter is a brother or a sister? So we're moving into kind of a new sermon series, not really an extension of the old one, but leading up to the covenant ceremony, we took a detailed look at the covenant commitments. Things like stewardship and peace and transformation. But stuck in the middle of the covenant commitments were these four entries that didn't quite fit with the rest of it. They weren't so much commitments or values as they were just metaphors for who the church is. And so we're going to spend the time between now and Advent going over and examining some of those metaphors. Tonight, we're looking at the metaphor of family. Now, I would argue that for both the New Testament and the early church, this was the driving metaphor. I mean, for instance, the Greek word adelphos meant siblings. It was your literal blood relatives, your brothers and your sisters. Except that the New Testament almost never uses it that way. I mean, time and again, the word is used to refer not to our physical blood family, but to our spiritual family. And that's not something that was peculiar to one author. And the New Testament authors like Peter or John or James, Paul, they each had their own way of talking about things, They used a little bit different vocabulary. They leaned on different metaphors. You know, Paul focused on faith, while John really focused in on love, and James was very concerned with obedience. But all of them, without exception, referred to both their readers and to one another with that word, adelphos, brother or sister. And then when Jesus was teaching his disciples to pray, I mean, it wasn't addressed to our shepherd or our king, not even to our God, it was to our Father in heaven. Or when Mary showed up to one of Jesus' teaching sessions, bringing his actual adelphos, and someone came to tell Jesus that his brothers and his mother wanted to talk with him, how did Jesus respond? He pointed to the people around him, to the crowds who were listening, to the disciples gathered at his feet, and said, "My family's right here. Because whoever does the will of my Father is my brother and sister and mother." And the early church was the same way. They actually didn't refer to themselves as Christians. That label, they didn't get all the way until Acts 12, which was several years after the church started being persecuted. It was a label that was really designed to separate them from the protections that were granted by Rome to the worshipers of Yahweh. It was a way of saying that these people don't follow the God of Israel, they follow this Christ figure. They're Christians. So, obviously it was a little while before they really started embracing that on their own terms as a sort of self-identity. But if you had asked them before that, who are you? Who are this group of people? There's a chance you'd get an answer such as, like, we are followers of the way, followers of Jesus. But more than likely, they would have told you, well, these are my brothers and sisters. That was the language they used. And in the same vein, the 16th century Anabaptists, they never called themselves Anabaptists. That was kind of an offensive term to them. Because the term Anabaptist was actually the charge that was being leveled against them. Anabaptists were originally a group of 4th century heretics who preached that if a person was baptized, that who had baptized you was not worthy, you had to get rebaptized by someone who was, or else it didn't count. It was considered a heresy because the church decided that it was the faith of the one being baptized that counted, not the faith of the one who was baptizing. Now, since rebaptism was deemed to be heretical and actually punishable by death, that was the label that people who wanted to kill the early Anabaptists put on them. Which is actually a little ironic when you think about it, because these Anabaptists were espousing the orthodox position that it really was the faith of the one being baptized that mattered, not the faith of the one who was baptizing him. I mean, when it came to the issue of baptism, the 16th century Anabaptists were the polar opposite of those 4th century heretics. It was the definition of a trumped-up charge. But it did give the people the legal grounds to sentence the Anabaptists to death. So, that's the label they used. Now, obviously, just like it had been with the label of Christian, it took people a long time to embrace that label for themselves. what they called each other was just brother and sister. See it over and over again in their correspondence to each other. When they're referring to themselves as a group, it's the group of brethren, the group of brothers and sisters. That's the only term they had for each other. They were family first and foremost. And time and again throughout history, the church has fallen back on the language of family to describe its members. And even today you see it with the Catholic terms like Father Jim or Sister Mary or Brother Bob. You see it today when we greet each other here, calling each other brother or sister during the hands of fellowship sometimes. Now, although it's not nearly as prevalent in the scriptures, there are actually hints of an even broader definition than that of family. One that encompasses not only believers, but everyone who is created in God's image. Everyone, period. Humanity as a whole. I mean, Genesis spends a great deal of time making the case that all people are ultimately tied together, that all humanity is created by God in His own image, and that human division is fundamentally the result of human sin. That's what the whole Tower of Babel thing was about, right? Then Luke's genealogy traces Jesus' lineage back to Adam, who the text then refers to as a child of God. Again, making the case that all of humanity is tied back to that one family of God. And then Ephesians 4 says that there is one God and Father of all. Or the story of the prodigal son. I mean, it really only makes sense to talk about returning to God if you've always been God's child. I mean, it doesn't make sense to return to something you never left. So that metaphor is there, although it was much more commonly used to refer to the church in particular. Now, these metaphors have real consequences, real effects. In particular, this metaphor lays underneath a lot of those covenant commitments that we've been talking about the last 2 months. And the sharing and stewardship commitment, for instance, ends by saying, "We recognize that as one human family, we share the gift of this earth. And we will work to live in a way that considers the needs of the human family on this planet." Now, they don't all reference it quite that directly, but I would say that our statements on peace, on work, play, and rest, servants, blessing, covenant life, they all contain at least a hint of that idea. That really we are family. And the scriptures are even more direct on this image. 1 John 3:17-18 reads, "How does God's love abide in anyone who has the world's goods and sees a brother or sister in need and yet refuses to help? Little children, let us love not in word or speech, but in truth and action." Now, if you're sitting there thinking, well, wait, I could have sworn that quote was from James. Well, that's probably because James 2:15-17 reads, "If a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill,' and yet does nothing to supply their bodily needs, What good is that? Such faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead. Now, back at the beginning of this sermon, I asked you, what does it mean to serve a God who says that everyone that we meet is a brother or a sister? I think these sort of passages make it pretty clear what that means. Not easy, don't get me wrong, but clear. Now, the metaphor of church and as family has been nearly universal across both denominations and across the centuries because of how useful it is in getting people to really look at each other as Christ sees us. Now, in spite of that, this image, like any metaphor, captures just one piece, one single frame of reference. And so eventually it'll come up short if we push it too far. Now, one way that that can happen is that, let's be honest, not everyone comes from a great family background. I've talked to several people, for instance, who have trouble with the idea of calling God Father because they really had a rocky relationship with their own father. Whether it's because their father was distant or abusive or just absent altogether. People can start to read those sort of things into God sometimes. And the metaphor of God as Father can actually be a bit of a stumbling block for them, at least until they manage to unlearn some of those things about what being a father means, what having a father means. Now, another example is that my wife, Rachel, hates when I refer to her as sister, even in a worship context, because if you push that image just a little too far, it starts to get a little messed up. I see a few of you who agree with her on that one. But we also have to deal with the fact that when we encounter a stranger, someone we've never known before, yes, they are a brother or a sister to us, but we also don't know them. We can't expect the same level of trust and familiarity with that person that we would with someone we had grown up with or lived with for years or decades. It doesn't happen that fast. But in spite of some of these limitations, the core truth of this image is there. That story that I told you at the beginning, where you see your sister in need, that's the reality that we find ourselves in every single day. When we see someone in need, be it in our own home or in our pew or across the street, that is our brother or sister. And seeing another in pain or in need should pain us the same way that it would to see our own family going through those things. Because that's exactly what they are. Our family. Even if in this cold and shadowed world, it takes us a few beats to recognize them. Now, this is actually one of the things that historically I think Third Way's done very well, viewing each other as family, really being there for each other and providing for each other. And I was supposed to introduce this a little earlier, but we are going to have a few minutes to invite anyone who wants to come up and talk about your experience with Third Way. How have we been there for each other as family? How we could do better if that's something that you think we need? So Josias, if you'd come up.
All right. While you guys think about some stories that you might want to share real quick, I'll just give you some time to think about a quick story to share. But while Chris was sharing that story, it was something that I experienced in my own life, where I saw my own brother, blood brother, homeless. And what's really unique about this story is that I wasn't able to give him a shelter at the situation, at the place I was at in life. I wasn't able to house him that moment, but Brooke and Matthew, a part of this community, took him in, and because they took him in, it gave him the space to have to heal, and now he's doing like so much better. If he would not have had that, if we would have tried to help him while he was on the street, we would have never gotten to the place that we did. But so my story involves how Third Way really, really has taken in my family, and it's just been remarkable. All right, guys, who wants to share a story about how you've experienced family within this community? Oh my goodness, quiet. It doesn't have to be a deep story. It can just be, Mark has one.
So this involves the Murrays. but so Abby and I were at a wedding, one of her friends, and I overheard a guy who was looking for a place to stay and whatever. I don't know. Anyways, I said, hey, I know a lot of people in the neighborhood. Again, it wasn't my home because I don't like be a couch. And I was like, well, the Murrays, maybe they might be interested. So I asked John, like, can I let a stranger like that I don't even know and isn't even really connected, like it's not even Abby's friend's friend. It's
He was the groom.
Yeah. Anyways. So yeah, but anyways. They said, yeah, sure, but we're actually not going to be home till really late. So you have the key code to our house. Just let him in and he can stay there. And so we did that and they weren't there. And I don't think he like met them till the next morning. And then John drove him to the airport. And I mean, it was just like, I don't know, kind of, it was really weird, really, to like let a stranger into a friend's house. I don't know. I don't even know if I would do that with my family, but... But with, I don't know, but yeah, that was.
Who else wants to share? It could also just be, it doesn't have to be a story, just remarks.
So as most of you know, my wife's health is not great. And in particular, after the pregnancy, she was having a lot of trouble getting around and stuff after the birth. And we had people from Third Way who volunteered to just come and take Rick for a little while so I could do grocery shopping or do the things that I needed to do when Rachel just physically wasn't able to care for Rick. And some of them are his godparents now. So.
Did all the extroverts not come to church gathering today?
That's exactly what I was thinking. It's all the introverts here tonight, including me. I don't know, Chris, when you were talking, I was just thinking family to me also feels like not always the big stories, but the mundane, like you're with these people all the time. And since I joined Third Way, I feel like I've had a group of people who are just like kind of on my team and willing to like be around for me. I haven't found myself in like a place of huge need that you guys have swooped in and like gotten me out of something. But yeah, Josias did jump my car one morning, which was awesome. That was family. But I just really feel like this is a place where I can express how I'm doing, and I know that you guys are like supportive of that wherever it is. So thank
you. So I just want to say I'm from a big family. Seven. Apparently this comment is an emergency. All right. I'm from a big family, seven children, and it was hard moving here to Minnesota from D.C. And for a while, it felt really lonely. But like Hannah was saying, it's good to have a group of folks that you can just be with. And I feel like Third Way has, to some extent, taken the place of my biological family that way. It's really fantastic.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, so we have teenage kids, and sometimes they need people to talk to. And so our daughter is very self-aware in some ways, and, you know, for a 17-year-old, but she really wanted to go see a counselor, and we really didn't want to pay for a counselor. But there was a time where, you know, that kind of stuff would get handled within family or within extended family or friends or neighborhood. And so Terry was the person for us that our daughter was able to go see, her and another friend. But it's those kind of relationships, I think, that are really great because, you know, when your kids start sharing stuff about their life that concerns you, you feel exposed and vulnerable as well, right? And so it's uncomfortable, but I just feel like it's really healthy because all that kind of stuff we have privatized and we've kept from one another. And, you know, it just gets my stuff out there to somebody who's in my community and sees a side of me that I don't always let people see. And so it is, you know, it can be unnerving to some level, but I think it's really healthy. And so I'm thankful for those kind of relationships.
And also the worship team can go up to the stage.
Okay, I was just thinking about how family, it's so much about food also. And I mean, I know that we often bring meals to each other in different situations. So to me, that feels very much like family. Like that is just happening all the time with Third Way. And also having each other in our homes happens a lot. And that doesn't always happen in Minnesota, I think, or in the Midwest, maybe. And so it just feels like somewhat vulnerable. And so I just feel like I've gone over to many people's houses for meals or just, I don't know, it just centering around food seems like a sign of family.
Let's hear another one. If there's a brave soul. All right.
I think part of it is even just on Facebook and other things, just seeing people posting a lot of needs. Like Connor said, sometimes it is meals. We get like meal trains going for people going through hard times or having kids. Sometimes even just, someone needs a ladder. Someone needs branch clippers, you know. Thanks, Dave. Yeah. You know, other things like that. You just see a lot of postings and a lot of people jumping to be able to help out, and it's really great. And I think seeing a lot of open doors, again, like Carla mentioned, has been kind of refreshing. Growing up in a neighborhood where, like, that was kind of the general policy, but then coming to the cities where everything was locked, it's like, no, everyone's, or a lot of folks, it seems, are very willing to open that. So it's been pretty great. And then having actual blood family come in too. I haven't had great like family history, but then Ashley and Colin came in. It's like, cool, this is great too. And I think speak for them, I guess, but they've experienced a lot of that around here too.
So we've got a closing song here, Let There Be Light.